Monsieur Lapierre, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Dallas Lapierre, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Lauren Varner. We are here today, Your Honor, on two disputed or appealed orders of the district court, the order granting defendant Michael Roan's motion for summary judgment as to plaintiff Lauren Varner's claim for an unlawful seizure, as well as a district court's order granting motion for summary judgment of Michael Roan on Mr. Varner's claim for illegal search of his truck. Addressing the first order, Your Honor, I believe we have a fairly straightforward issue in front of us, which is that the district court simply failed to consider the plausible, to consider true facts at this litigation stage in the light most favorable to the plaintiff to determine that those facts did not plausibly suggest a claim for an unlawful seizure. The facts of the issue, Your Honor, are fairly simple. Mr. Varner was in the tailgate bar and grill having a meal, having just been released after having been arrested by Michael Roan on another case. In the middle of Mr. Varner's meal, Michael Roan entered the establishment, marched directly to Mr. Varner, ordered him to grab his coat and exit the restaurant. Upon exiting the restaurant, Michael Roan ordered Mr. Varner to empty his pockets, which Mr. Varner did. Upon Mr. Varner emptying his pockets, Michael Roan then, without permission or consent, pat searched Mr. Varner, and again, finding no drugs or any weapons, advised Mr. Varner that he was now going to have a drug dog sniff around his vehicle. These considered true facts are clearly sufficient to plausibly suggest that a reasonable individual in Mr. Varner's position would not believe that he was free to terminate this encounter, but was instead under an individualized investigation for criminal wrongdoing. The district court analogized this case as close to the Drayton and the Monroe cases, and I think the court did that in error. In the Drayton case, Your Honor, that is Drayton v. Monroe, 536 U.S. 194, the officers in that case had conducted a routine drug interdiction on a bus. They had entered the bus and taken positions that they assured did not block the aisle or exit, quietly spoke to each individual passenger and advised them that they were doing a routine interdiction effort, and politely asked them that they would consent to a search of their person or their baggage. The issue in that case was whether or not the officers had to advise the individuals that they had a right to refuse consent, which the court did not, or ruled they did not need to provide. The court noted that the officers ensured that the passengers had a free aisle to leave, spoke politely, provided no command to answer questions or compel consent. And the issue there, Your Honor, was clearly that this was a generalized investigation, a consensual encounter, or a routine encounter. And that is clearly distinct from the case at hand, Your Honor, where Mr. Varner was targeted individually and made to believe he was under the individual investigation for criminal wrongdoing.
Okay, Counselor, Mr. Prier, this is Judge Keenan. I'm a little bit concerned here because it seems to me what you're doing is making an argument that is not reflected in your pleadings. In other words, where are the facts in your pleadings other than command that indicate that there was a seizure here?
Yes, Your Honor. There's obviously the command to exit the building and to empty his pockets, Your Honor, but there's also the fact that there was an unrequested and unconsented to physical search. There was the presence of the officer.
Have you pleaded those facts that he did not consent?
Yes, Your Honor, we did. Looking at the complaint in this matter, I'm trying to find the exact paragraph number for you, Your Honor. It says specifically under paragraph 17, once outside said establishment, Roan commanded Mr. Varner to empty his pockets, and then finding nothing, Roan physically searched Mr. Varner. And there was no indication within the statement that Mr. Varner was asked or ever consented. And in fact, that is the allegation that he, by inference, did not, obviously, consent or was asked.
That's not what Judge Keenan asked you. She asked you, did you plead that he, it was done against his will, or that he couldn't refuse, or did you say that?
No, Your Honor, we did not.
Why did you?
No, Your Honor, we did not specifically plead that Mr. Varner refused, because Mr. Varner did not refuse. We did not specifically plead that he was not asked. Probably, Your Honor, I have to say through any narco plea.
Did you plead that he felt that he could not refuse?
Your Honor, I do not believe we specifically pled that he felt that he could not refuse. We just pled the facts supporting that particular allegation in the facts section, Your Honor.
Isn't that a problem? You see, this is not just the fact that he did that. Police officers, they do that all day long. The question is, would a reasonable person have felt under the circumstances? You don't even plead that he did. He felt that way.
Yes, Your Honor, we were pleading the facts, and I do not believe we pled that.
You can plead state of mind for your client. That's not a conclusion. You say state of mind that he felt he commanded, and he didn't feel he could refuse. You didn't plead those things. You didn't plead any of that, did you?
No, Your Honor, we did not directly plead his state of mind.
All right, go ahead.
Of course, Your Honor. And the complaint does allege also in paragraph 35 that Mr. Officer Roan did demand to search Mr. Varner's body. And it is really the totality of the circumstances of Mr. Varner having been singled out within the restaurant, ordered to leave, ordered to empty his pockets, searched without consent, and then advised that they were going to run a dog around his car looking for drugs that led him to believe he was being individually targeted. This is much closer to the case of U.S. v. Jones, Your Honor, where an officer followed an individual's car with out-of-state tags into a private parking lot on an apartment complex. Once the individual had parked, he pulled further up the one-way street such that his car blocked their exit should they have attempted to leave, exited the car, immediately singled out the driver of the vehicle, walked up to him, asked him if he would lift up his shirt to confirm there was no weapons, asked if he minded if he searched him. And at that point, the court held that this was a seizure because it lacked all the traditional hallmarks of consensual encounter. Specifically, it was not a routine encounter, but one targeted at Jones, and that the officer's repeated intrusive questionings created the impression within Jones that he was being subject to an individualized criminal investigation of his wrongdoing, and as such would not feel free to terminate the encounter. Those facts alleged in this case plausibly suggest that discovery would produce evidence that a seizure of Mr. Varner occurred under these circumstances without any lawful purpose. And the district court simply failed to consider those facts sufficiently in granting the defendant's motion to dismiss. Moving, Your Honor,
your argument is that all reasonable inferences at this point should have been drawn. That the best argument is that there's a reasonable inference that he was ordered and he did it, that he didn't consent. That's your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. The reasonable inference is that he did not feel he was free to terminate the encounter based on those previously stated facts, which was not drawn in his favor. Moving, Your Honors, to the second order in this case, the order granting summary judgment on the claim of unlawful search. In this case, the court failed to consider the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, drawing all reasonable inferences in his favor again, when the district court conducted a credibility determination and favored the testimony of one of the officers over that of Mr. Varner. Unfortunately, the incident in question was not audio or video recorded by any officer, nor was there any written report made. So the only evidence we have in this case is the testimony of the individuals involved, namely the testimony of Lauren Varner, the testimony of Michael Roan, and the testimony of Officer Johnson, the drug dog officer in the case. Officer Johnson testifies that he ran the drug dog around Mr. Varner's car. Outside of the view of anyone but himself, he alleges that the dog pressed his nose against the side of the vehicle, which was the alert. He then notified the other officers that there was an alert and Mr. Varner's vehicle was searched. Mr. Varner, on the other hand, testifies that he was standing next to Officer Roan. They were both silently watching the drug dog run around the vehicle. The drug dog ran around the vehicle multiple times, each time veering off to jump on the back of the police vehicle. And on the final time around the vehicle, Officer Johnson slapped the hood of the vehicle. The dog jumped at the point where the slap occurred, and that Officer Roan then turned to Mr. Varner and advised him, the dog is cued, I now have probable cause to search your vehicle, hand me your keys," which he did, and a search occurred. Mr. Varner testifies that Officer Johnson did not hear Officer Johnson at any time alert anybody that there had been an alert during the course of this event. The district court stated that it was disregarding Mr. Varner's testimony because he did not have the expertise to determine what was an alert, and that Officer Johnson's testimony was not directly contradicted. And respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree with the district court on this point. Mr. Varner is stating the facts as he saw them, and if he is standing right next to Officer Roan and he does not hear or see Officer Johnson give anybody an indication that there has been an alert, but he does see what he believes, or he does see the officer slap the car, the jump, and Michael Roan declare that an alert, which gives him probable cause, those facts, while not direct evidence, are circumstantial evidence that contradicts Officer Johnson's testimony. There is no other evidence but the testimony of the three involved, and so it comes down to a credibility determination between the three affidavits, the three testifying individuals, and that is a determination that is classically for the jury.
Why wasn't Johnson of case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed part of your question there. What was that?
Is Johnson even a party to the case?
No, Your Honor, Officer Johnson is not a party to the case.
Why not?
I believe when it was originally filed, Your Honor, we did not have the information that Officer Johnson was the person who had conducted the drug dog search. Our understanding was it was another member of the Skyline Regional Drug Task Force. Through the course of discovery, Officer Johnson was discovered to be the officer in question. And we simply did not, at that time, elect to add him to this case. Going back to the issue at hand, Your Honor, the defendant attempts to assert that Mr. Varner is simply piling speculation on top of speculation in order to create a genuine issue of material fact. And our position is that is actually absolutely incorrect. Mr. Varner is testifying as to the facts of what he saw and heard, and those facts create a conflict between the testimony of the only witnesses to the incident that is for the jury to decide. The defendant cites to the Glynn case for the proposition that Mr. Varner's testimony is simply unsupported speculation that should be disregarded. But this case is significantly distinct from Glynn. In Glynn, the individual was offered his testimony that some parts in a Cretan case were defective. His opinion, however, was contradicted by lab tests done that passed the parts and by the plaintiff's own testimony that the parts, while they deviated from the standard, were no doubt good and that the customer was satisfied with them. And in light of the concrete facts that contradicted his testimony or his opinion, Mr. Glynn was disbelieved and his testimony was said to be mere speculation or opinion that did not support a finding of a material fact in dispute. In this case, Mr. Varner is testifying as to actual facts that he saw, the actions of Officer Johnson, the actions of Officer Roan, the actions of the dog, and his own actions. And those actions are not contradicted by any hard or concrete facts anywhere else in the record. The only contradictions are in the testimony of the witnesses, which again, the weighing of witness testimony and accrediting or discrediting of that particular evidence is a classic function for the jury. And I've reached the end of my time, Your Honor.
All right.
If you have any questions for me, I'll happily answer them.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Johnson?
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Judge Gregory, Judge Wilson, Judge Keenan, this is Carlene Johnson for appellee Michael Roan. The questions that were being asked of Varner's attorney as to what other facts are alleged in the complaint other than the word commanded is exactly the questioning that the district court had of the plaintiff's counsel at almost the outset of this case, the transcript is in the record. What other than the word commanded are you alleging are facts that support this being a non-consensual encounter? And I would point out that all this time later, you know, a year after the case was litigated, after the discovery was completed, the deadlines had passed, the extensions that the plaintiff's counsel got for discovery had passed, and we're here in the Fourth Circuit now in Varner's own opening brief, particularly at pages 24 and 25. Varner himself equates the word commanded with request. It's referred to repeatedly throughout, especially pages 24 and 25, that Mr. Varner was requested. So I would submit that even Varner acknowledges exactly what it was that the district court was querying way back when in this litigation at the outset with respect to the count one claim, acknowledges that there aren't any facts here that are alleged showing satisfying the Fourth Amendment implication that is fundamental to the claim count one is depending upon.
Is that a deposition you're quoting?
No, I'm referring to the opening brief in this court, the Fourth Circuit, the opening brief of Mr. Varner. If you look at pages 24 and 25 of that brief, Mr. Varner
that's counsel's word. That's not his word. Is by his pleading that he says command, unless there's a deposition or affidavit that says otherwise.
Well, we have, but this is with respect to the motion to dismiss the count one claim, which was based on the allegations and the sufficiency of the facts alleged in count one for that claim. And so it comes down to a matter of what facts has the plaintiff alleged in the complaint sufficient to satisfy the elements of the count one Fourth Amendment claim. And the word commanded is what the plaintiff has pointed to as the fact with respect to basing their Fourth Amendment claim on that. And plaintiff, in their own opening brief in this Fourth Circuit, has themselves interpreted the word commanded as being a request, which only further supports that the allegations in the complaint are not sufficient to plead satisfaction of the elements of a Fourth Circuit claim to show that this was not a consensual encounter. And I would further point out, just procedurally with respect to this case, 10 days after Michael Roan filed the motion for summary judgment, which was almost a year after the case had been litigated and we'd gone through discovery and all the deadlines had passed, 10 days after Michael Roan filed the summary judgment motion with respect to the count two, the only claim remaining in the case, Varner filed a motion to voluntarily dismiss the case. Michael Roan opposed that, having been put to the burden and expense of hearings and having to obtain court orders even to take the plaintiff's deposition as well as the other fact witness depositions, and having to make motions over the plaintiff's refusal to answer questions in his deposition about complaint allegations, and having already filed the pending summary judgment motion. And the district court, though she granted the summary judgment motion as to count two, having already dismissed count one, thought that the motion for voluntary dismissal by the plaintiff was moot. But the district court said that if she were to rule on the motion to dismiss, the dismissal would be with prejudice. And pursuant to Rule 41A2, the district court has that discretion. The Rule 41A2 provides that a dismissal of the plaintiff's request can only be by court order on terms that the court considers proper. And then coming into the Varner did not ask the district court to have his case go forward to trial. Quite the opposite. He wanted the district court to dismiss the case. And in fact, the reason that he gave was, and it's in the record, with respect to the motion to dismiss and the reply brief that Varner filed in support of the motion to dismiss, was that he wanted to add other parties to the case and have a whole new case that had everybody, all officers in it. But he never filed a motion. description even and sought to have it consolidated, didn't do any of those things. And so then now having not asked the district court to let this case go to trial, Mr. Varner has now come into the Fourth Circuit asking that this case go to trial, which is not what it was he was even asking for in the district court. I would point out, too, I found it perplexing in the opening brief and in the reply brief that Varner has filed in the Fourth Circuit. In his conclusion, page 47 of the opening brief and page 8 of the reply brief, Varner only asked for a reversal of the summary judgment motion, which is a count 2 claim, and doesn't even mention in there asking the court to do anything with respect to the dismissal of count 1. The civil action requires the plaintiff to have alleged facts that are sufficient to show entitlement on the claim that he asserts, and there are elements of the Fourth Amendment claim, an unreasonable search and seizure by a governmental actor. And I submit, and the district court, I think, properly ruled that on no more facts than the plaintiff has alleged with respect to count 1, that he is not satisfied the elements of those claims under the applicable pleading standard, and dismiss it. Now, the district court dismissed it without prejudice, but the plaintiff never amended, never sought to amend, not at any point during discovery, not at the conclusion of the discovery, at any point at all. I think that the court did not err in that dismissal, and that it should be affirmed. With respect, and there are a couple, I'm sorry.
So you're saying he didn't plead enough when he said that
he didn't plead facts that are sufficient to satisfy the elements. And in fact, the number of, I won't go through, I think the plaintiff's counsel has misrepresented what some of the factual allegations and added things like marched directly to Varner and some other things I heard that are not anywhere in this complaint. Also, there are other things in the complaint that further show a reasonable person in Varner's position would know that he could refuse, that his liberty was not being restrained, that he could terminate the encounter, because in fact, Varner did. When he was asked to take a breathalyzer test, and he's alleged in the complaint as being in a bar and for a drink and to eat, and there's also a heading in the complaint actually that refers to a DWI, that Mr. Varner refused. And he said he refused. He knew he could terminate the encounter, and that further shows that not only would an objectively reasonable person in Mr. Varner's shoes know he could terminate the encounter, but Mr. Varner himself knew that. He did. When he didn't want to take a breathalyzer,
he
left, and the officers left. It was a non-event. They went on their own ways. Only further showing that an objectively reasonable person in Mr. Varner's shoes, and in fact Mr. Varner himself, viewed this as something he could leave if he wanted to. It was a consensual encounter. There were no facts showing that it was coercive in any way, and no facts that the court has sometimes looked to, and I'm thinking more recent cases, and while in the criminal context, and I think that's a distinction here too, because of course in the civil lawsuit, Varner bears the burden of alleging facts sufficient for his pleading obligations, but there are no allegations here about any sort of intimidation, racial profiling in the disadvantaged community. There's no blocking in of a car so that Mr. Varner can't exit or leave or go on his way. There's no uniform. I'm sorry?
Isn't the pudding here that he actually, you know, is a question of whether he felt free or not to leave. He actually exercised his right to leave. He refused to take the breathalyzer test. He left, as you say, they went their own way, and that was that.
That was that.
And given the fact that he not only felt free to leave, he did leave. He actually left. And he wasn't pursued. He wasn't restrained. That's that. What more is there to say?
I will say nothing further. Move on to the summary judgment claim, unless anyone has a question for me with respect to the count 1, which was dismissed on the pleadings. Okay, so the count 2 claim has to do with the search of occurred after a drug, a free air drug dog sniff, drug dog Zeke, that was being handled by a canine officer from a separate agency, the City of Waynesboro Police Department. In his opening brief, Mr. Varner agrees that drug dog Zeke alerted to Varner's truck. Mr. Varner states that it's uncontested that as a result of this dog alert, Defendant Roan asserted he now had probable cause to search Mr. Varner's vehicle. Mr. Varner acknowledges that a drug dog's alert can provide probable cause for a search. Mr. Varner's only argument is he says is he disputes whether or not the alert was manufactured.
This is not again, Johnson's not even a defendant to begin with. And the idea that he manufactured some kind of positive alert, there are no facts to support that. It's total speculation. I mean, he talks about whether Roan heard Johnson report the alert or whatever, whether he heard it or what, that's not even really relevant. But he's making a claim against a non-party that the non-party manufactured a positive alert. There's nothing manufactured about it. The dog, who was apparently some kind of superstar, and Johnson had a long relationship, and as far as we know, the dog pressed his nose against the car and pointed his feet, which is what the dog usually does. I know, it's just when you look at the record here, it doesn't suggest any kind of manipulation or manufacture. So what is it? I mean, what else is there? What is there to add?
I don't know that I have anything to add. I think that's correct. It's not a credibility issue, as Mr. Varner wants to represent it to be. It's a matter of having competent evidence. And Rule 56 itself refers to someone having to be competent to testify on the matter stated. The only competent evidence here is that this canine officer and his dog, they are certified by the Virginia Police Canine Association, their training records. In fact, they had passed the most recent training for certification just in November of 2016 before this incident, which was in January of 2017. So just in the last 2 months, we're in a controlled environment. Zeke had 100% accuracy. He found all of the drugs he was supposed to find, and they didn't have any false alerts at all. And the Mr. Varner's attorney made reference to the canine officer having done this free air sniffed in a place where only he could see, as if there was something secretive to that. That's not accurate. The dog.
Go over all of that in your brief, and quite rightly, I think, because of, I mean, this idea that he manufactured, there are no facts in this record to support any such claim. There just aren't. So
that's correct.
I don't know
I'm sorry.
I don't know what more there is to say.
I would address this other aspect that Mr. Varner has tried to make it sound secretive on the part of the canine officer or someone. Michael Roan himself testified he didn't recall which officer told him the dog had alerted. The evidence shows that Michael Roan and Mr. Varner were standing next to each other about 50 feet away from where Mr. Varner's truck was. The canine officer was handling the dog. They were going around the perimeter in the public parking lot of this vehicle. The dog was alerting on the passenger side door, which is on the other side of the vehicle from where Mr. Varner and Mr. Roan were. That's not something secretive. That's where the dog was alerting. He was alerting by pressing his nose against the door and kept his feet on the ground, which is what his alert is, according to his training and his experience and his canine officer working with the dog. It's all laid out in the evidence. Mr. Varner and neither Mr. Varner nor Mike Roan could see that side of the truck or the door, but there's no dispute that the canine officer reported the alert, and in fact the recording of his call to dispatch reporting the positive alert at the tailgate parking lot is part of the record. One of the other officers, two of the other officers were other places in the parking lot, and Michael Roan didn't recall exactly which one conveyed to him that the canine officer's dog had alerted and that the canine officer had announced that alert. But there's no dispute that there was that determination by the canine officer based on his handling of this drug dog that, with which he's certified. And it's completely a reliable drug dog that's all in the record. And of course, in any event, there is nothing here, not only to no evidence that it was a manufactured alert, but certainly no evidence that Michael Roan had any reason to think that there was anything untoward at all about what the canine officer and the drug dog were doing and about the alert that was determined. And that does, under the well-settled law, provide probable cause for the search that followed.
The whole thing is some sort of ludicrous conspiracy theory. I guess I don't know who the conspiracy is between. Is it between Johnson and the dog?
I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Zeke, but he'll probably plead the fifth.
the evidence shows that Zeke is a superstar.
He had 100% accuracy record in his training just 2 months before in a controlled environment. I believe Chief Judge Gregory and Judge Keenan were also on this panel of the U.S. against Green case, in Fourth Circuit 2014, that talked about the reliability of a dog and a drug dog being based on its performance in controlled testing environments, spoke about the Florida against Harris case with Justice Kagan's writing for the unanimous Supreme Court that talked about the presumption that a dog's alert provides probable cause for a search, and the satisfactory performance in a certification or a training program for the drug dog provides that reliability and that ability to rely upon that for probable cause for the search, and that's what we have here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. LePere?
Yes, Your Honor, please, the court. I wanted to address a few issues that came up in the my co-counsel's arguments on this case. The first issue I want to address is that there is an assertion that Mr. Varner felt free to leave at any time because at the end of the encounter, after Officer Roan had Mr. Varner's vehicle searched and had found nothing, and after he had been searched and there had been nothing found, Officer Roan asked Mr. Varner to conduct a breathalyzer test, and Mr. Varner declined. The assertion was that then Mr. Varner left the scene and therefore knew the entire time he could have terminated and left the scene. However, as alleged, the facts are slightly different. It is that when Mr. Varner was at the end of all of this, having been searched himself, having had his truck searched, they asked him if he would take a breathalyzer. He declined. And then Officer Roan left, not Mr. Varner. Mr. Varner actually remained at the tailgate restaurant where he was. So that does not indicate somehow that he knew throughout the course of this that he was
counsel, you're missing the part about he said no. And the point
yes, was, Your Honor.
I'm saying I agree with it, but you had addressed that. It's evidence that he knew he could say no, which is a refusal. And notwithstanding that the officer walked off, can you address that in response to, I think it was Judge Wilkinson's argument. Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. And the difference here is that Mr. Varner said no to something that he was for the first time asked to consent to. He was asked to take a breathalyzer test, and he said no, he was not going to do that. And that issue is completely different than...
That's a good point. It's the first time he was asked.
Throughout the course of this encounter, Your Honor, he was commanded to leave the restaurant. He was commanded to empty his pockets. He was searched with no indication that there was a request. He was told he was going to have a dog ran around his vehicle. He was told there was no probable cause. Give him your keys. And then at the end, once all of this is done, he's had a thorough search of his vehicle. He's finally asked, will you take a breathalyzer? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not driving. And then Officer Roan left. So that doesn't indicate that he felt through all of these commands that he was able to leave. The second issue is my co-counsel brings up that there was an allegation or a reference to these commands as requests within the pleadings. And that is very accurate. That is because in the pleadings, he was comparing these commands to the request in Jones. In Jones, the officer said, "Will you lift your shirt up so I can see if you're armed? Do you mind if I pat you down for weapons?" And that was still found to be a seizure. And here, the complaint uses the word commands, but either way, repeated and intrusive requests, even at our actual request, that indicate an individualized investigation of criminal behavior by this particular person, leave a reasonable person subject to not feeling free to leave that particular encounter. And as the Monroe case makes very clear, an individual's subjective beliefs do not render a search consensual or unconsensual. In Monroe, the individual testified that when an officer approached him at home and asked him for a DNA sample as part of an investigation into serial rapes, where everybody who fit the profile of the particular rapist was being asked for their DNA sample, he said, "Based on my belief of the relations between African Americans and the police in this community, I did not feel free to terminate that encounter." And the court said that your subjective beliefs are irrelevant. The other indicia, the objective indicia, are not there in that case. In this case, Your Honor, we submit that the objective indicia are there. Mr. Varner was repeatedly commanded to do things that were intrusive, such as emptying his pockets, submit to a search, leave his meal to go outside, grab his jacket, and then obviously to turn over his vehicle to be searched by a drug dog and then himself be physically searched. And that is vastly different than the case law in question that they are addressing. The second issue is that the concern is not that Officer Johnson was being secretive about the search when we're setting to the second issue at hand, Your Honors. The issue is that Officer Michael Roan, Mr. Varner, and the other officers on the scene were on one side of the vehicle. The drug dog officer asserts that the dog alerted on a side where nobody but him could see it. Despite the clear policy of his own police department, there is no body cam video of this event. There's no audio recording of this event. He does eventually report to his dispatch sometime later that there was a alert, but on scene, that report to his dispatch does not include any indication of how aware or what the alert was. The only evidence is the individual's on-scene testimony of what they saw. Mr. Varner says he saw, in his deposition testimony, Officer Johnson run the dog around it, slap his fender, at which point the dog jumped. He says he never saw, and Officer Johnson did not advise anybody, because he could not hear, he could not see him make that advisement, and the officers were with him, that there had been an alert. That having viewed the dog jump on the fender, Officer Roan said, "The dog is now alerted. I have probable cause. Give me your keys." That is at odds with the testimony of Officer Johnson, which has no other evidence to support it other than his testimony. It may be unlikely, it may be unbelievable, but those are weighting of credibility of the testimony in the case that is for the jury, that Officer Johnson was untrue and Mr. Varner was correct. The issue is Officer Roan himself does not testify as to who told him or where he heard it, but he does testify quite contradictory to Mr. Varner that he was not watching the scene. And again, these distinct disputes of fact are material because they provide evidence that the alert, and the only alert that anyone was aware of, was the drug dog jumping on the hood in response to a slap, which is clear improper cueing of the dog, as according to the experts in the case, that would result in manufactured probable cause. And the case law is clear that you cannot search or conduct a warrantless search based on manufactured probable cause. I understand the dog is reliable, according to the evidence in the record, and nobody disputes that. The dispute is over whether or not the alert was cued by Officer Johnson, whether or not Mr. Roan saw that cue alert and knew it. And I'm out of time, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you so much for your argument, both counsel. We can't come down to shake your hands, but know that we appreciate very much your arguments here today, and wish you well. Be safe and stay well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome. And we'll ask the deputy to adjourn the court for the day.
Yes, sir. This honorable court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning, this afternoon, sorry. God save the United States and this honorable court.